What is anger and where does it come from? Understanding anger gives you the control.
Hi, my name is Trina Glines, and this is Elevate Your Marriage and Life podcast. This podcast is for those who want to create happiness daily, even among the chaos marriage and family life will bring. Get ready to elevate your marriage and life today. Welcome, ladies. I am excited to have this conversation, a very candid conversation today with Dr. John, who his last name can be a little bit of a tongue twister, so I'm going to attempt it. It's Schinnerer.
Schinnerer.
Okay, so we're going to go by Dr. John. Okay. That is what he typically is known as. So anyway, Dr. John, he says he is inspired by human potential and our interconnectedness. Dr. John's mission is to enable all people to develop powerful, authentic selves, live according to their values, and make a positive impact in their work as well as their personal lives. Dr. John's anger management counseling and courses are the path to experiencing the next level of life. He shares with clients how to master their psychology, physiology, productivity, and people skills so they can feel alive again, find their purpose, and feel more joyous, confident, and fulfillment in every area of their life.
A very kind introduction.
Oh, well, it is what you do.
I have passion with which you read that.
Well, I am passionate about having this conversation with you because obviously I work with ladies who have some challenges with their spouse with having anger. And, you know, it's not my specialty. It's not what I have gone and studied a lot about. And so when you and I met at a conference, I was like, oh, we so have to hook up. I need to talk with you. My ladies are going to love. Thank you, John, for taking your valuable time to meet with me. I appreciate it.
Of course.
Okay. So we're going to get right into the meat and potatoes.
All right.
So one thing I know a little bit about anger, is that anger is a secondary emotion. Would you mind giving us a 101 on what anger is?
Sure. So there's no easy answer to this question. So let me break it down a little bit. So to me, there's four pieces to anger. There's the emotional piece where we label it. It's a feeling piece. We've got anything from irritation to annoyance to frustration to anger to rage. Then there's a cognitive piece, which is the thoughts we have when we're getting angry. He shouldn't do that. I can't take this anymore. No one likes me. Then there's a physiological component, which is what's happening in your body when you're getting angry. So the adrenaline surge, the eyes narrowing, the blood rushing to your fists to prepare you to attack, the shallow breathing, the muscle tension. And then the final piece is this attentional piece, which is that anger causes you to focus on things in the environment which serve to reinforce your anger. Mm. So anger is kind of like the devil sitting on your shoulder. It grabs your eyeballs and it forces you to look around the environment to find things that continue to keep you mad. Mm. So it's just looking to keep itself alive at some level. Now, you mentioned anger as a secondary emotion. It's interesting because I remember we've had this debate in my office suite many times where the other therapists are like, anger is only a secondary emotion. I'm like, well, yes, it can be a secondary emotion, but it can also be a primary emotion, which means that certain things happen and we just feel anger. For instance, let's say someone cuts us off on the freeway. That's just anger. There's no secondary emotion there, I would argue. I guess at times there could be, if you're in there by yourself, it could be fear, but I would say that the anger comes first and then fear. Mm-hmm. Then it's a secondary emotion in that you can feel embarrassment, you can feel anxiety, and quickly that flips to anger. And think of like a third of a second kind of a time frame. Mm-hmm. The one that I've seen the most in myself is when my feelings get hurt. So when my feelings get hurt, I've seen that flip to anger immediately. And so now that I'm a little bit older and more mature, when I get angry, the first question I ask myself is, okay, did something just hurt my feelings? Because about 90% of the time, that answer is yes. So if I can get down to that level, it's easier to disengage from the anger and move to, okay, what just hurt my feelings?
Nice. Oh, yeah. I like that. I like if you can catch yourself in that moment and check the meaning almost like.
Right. Well, if I can get to that level and then say to my significant other, you know, when you said, I don't know, I'm getting a little bit fat, that hurt my feelings, that's a much better conversation than if I come at her with anger, that just shuts down conversation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, I like that. Okay, that's good. Well, let's carry that on with, you know, living with a spouse or significant other that struggles with anger, okay? What are the consequences for the non-angry spouse if the angry spouse does not figure out a way to control their anger?
Okay, so, you know, to me, I go to the work of John Gottman, who's, in my opinion, the world's leading expert on relationships. He's probably spent 40 years looking at why do people divorce and then what makes a successful relationship. So he's got the four horsemen of the apocalypse. Mm-hmm. So those are criticism, contempt, stonewalling, and defensiveness. And if you look at, so criticism, you know, you can attack someone, let's say your spouse asks you to fix a leaky sink and you don't do it. And she's like, oh my God, you're so lazy. Well, that's a criticism. That's attacking you, not the behavior of the situation. Then you've got defensiveness where people will get into an argument, or let's say if you even get a criticism or a perceived criticism and your spouse responds with anger, that's defensiveness and it tends to shut down even conversations. Contempt is where you feel that you're superior to the other person in some way. And so you talk down to them. It's putting yourself on a different level and speaking down to them. Why can't you be smarter? Why can't you use your head? You always do this. And it's a mixture of anger and disgust. And then there's stonewalling, which is getting into a conversation or an argument. One person, I think, gets their feelings hurt. They get angry and then they just shut down and they'll withdraw from the conversation. So to me, each of those has an element of anger to it. And what we're talking about here with these four horsemen is they're all ways that shut down communication. And to me, a great relationship is based on open and transparent communication. So any of these things that shut down communication are, I would say, deadly to a relationship or potentially deadly. Mm-hmm. And so I think that, you know, chronic anger and irritability, what they do is they train your partner to withdraw from future conversations. The lesson there is, geez, if I bring up, you know, like finances, I'm going to get blasted again. Mm-hmm. It's not going to change anything. Why should I even bother? Why bring it up? Mm-hmm. And so it sets that dynamic into motion. You begin to withdraw, resentment builds over time, you get more and more angry. And then it's kind of this sort of a dynamic where you gradually split.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, John Gottman's stuff is amazing, amazing. And I agree with you, his research on being able to predict, you know, divorce, it's kind of scary. It's pretty spot, you know, it's
interesting in that, you know, there's only like three forms of couples counseling that are based on research and science. So there's a lot of couples counselors out there that are doing things that aren't really based on any empirical evidence, mm-hmm. which to me is a little bit worrisome. Mm-hmm. So, you know, for those of you who are looking at going to couples counseling, make sure that you find someone that is doing their work based on research. That would be my opinion. So you can do, you know, John Gottman or Sue Johnson, both good sources.
Oh, those are great resources. I know I've advised several of my ladies, you know, read the John Gottman book. If their spouses will do it together, because there's so many exercises. And I love how his really focuses on creating a more intimate relationship. How mm-hmm. can we become more intimate? And it's not sexually intimate. It's knowing each other so intimately. You know everything about one another. So when the hiccups come, because they will, because the world is constantly maneuvering, you have a more solid foundation.
Absolutely.
right? So yeah, I love his stuff. That's amazing. So it's probably, this is probably a difficult answer or question to ask you and get an answer from. You know, say you do have a spouse who is angry or suffers, or that's their challenge, is having that anger rise, right? Can the non-angry spouse do anything about it in the moment that's going to help at all?
Yeah, I think that, you know, generally what you want to do is bring it to their attention. So, honey, it seems like you're getting a little bit annoyed or irritated. How about if we talk later when you've calmed down? And then disengage from the situation. I get this question a lot, and it's difficult in the sense that one of the things I always tell my clients is, if you're getting in an argument and you're going back and forth and getting escalated and beginning to yell at each other, nothing you say is getting into your partner's head, because they're angry and their only concern is, I want to let my argument be known. I want you to understand that I'm right, and all the blame is being externalized onto you. So understand that those shouting matches aren't really doing, they're not accomplishing anything. Mm-hmm. So I think once you understand that, it helps you to kind of disengage, pull back and say, how about if we talk when we're calm? Mm-hmm. Now, the extension of that is, you know, if there's a real anger problem, I think you can drop seeds, plant seeds in your partner's mind that, hey, I think there's something more going on here that you need to speak to someone about. But you have to do that when the other person is calm, mm-hmm. when they have a chance of hearing you. Mm-hmm. And then give them examples of things that they said or things that they did when they were angry, and know that some people don't remember what they did when they're really angry. So it's a difficult question in that I don't think there's a whole lot other people can say to us when we're really angry. I mean, you know, the traditional stuff, breathe, relax, take a time out, all that stuff, if it's coming from outside you, typically serves to make you more angry. But if it comes from inside you, you're like, oh, wait, I'm starting to get annoyed. Okay, I need to breathe. Like, let me take a time out. Let me excuse myself. That stuff can work, but it's got to be internally driven.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And as we kind of communicated before this interview, most of your clients are individuals that somewhere, somehow it's been brought to their attention. They've got an anger problem. And they're coming into you saying, I guess I've been told this. Mm-hmm. And is there a way to, like, speed that process to get them to, like, really desire to find that? Because, like you said, there's not much the spouse can do, but yet.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, you continue to have conversations about it when they're calm. I think you continue to point out some of the behaviors that come up. I think you continue to point out, gee, maybe this isn't constructive, or maybe this, you know, the other approach is, it shuts me down when you come at me with anger. Mm-hmm. You know, describing how it makes you feel. It makes me feel less than, it makes me feel afraid. That's not healthy for our relationship. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think I was telling you earlier that most of the people that I see that are adults with anger problems, the reason they come to see me is the ultimatum: if you don't see someone, I'm leaving.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, talking about speeding it up, I suppose that's one way to speed it up.
Yeah. It's kind of like,
it's difficult.
Here's the stop sign, I'm done.
Because we don't see it when we're angry. Mm-hmm. And what we do is we'll say, you made me angry, it's your fault. You shouldn't have been late. Mm-hmm. Or you shouldn't have talked to me like that.
Yeah.
Well, okay, maybe, but it's still my anger that I need to deal with.
Mm-hmm. Well, that takes us perfectly into the next little section that I'm hoping to spend a little bit more time on. You have tools that you teach these individuals on how to control their anger. I want you to share those tools with me. But before we get into the tools, do you believe that these tools can work to an extent that it's so successful that, because I think there's some people that think, I'm going to have to be in therapy for the rest of my life, right? Like, is it, and that's daunting. And I, in my realm of work, I think it's extremely daunting for men. Men don't want to go to therapy in general. Nobody does, but for some reason, I think there's a hiccup there. Not quite sure why. But do you believe they can learn these tools and not have to continue this feel-good therapy like you and I talked about to get the success that they want.
Yeah, and to back up a minute, I mean, that's why I do coaching, not therapy, because I think that men can relate more to coaching. I think, you know, my approach is to try and teach tools, which I think is less threatening, because honestly, it scares the bejesus out of men to go to any sort of therapy. I mean, most men are just, it scares them. I think that's part of it. It's embarrassing. I mean, we don't even like to stop to ask for directions.
Yeah.
Why would we stop to ask someone how to deal with something more personal that's going on inside of us? So I think it takes a great deal of courage just to come in and be open to it. Mm-hmm. So I always praise the clients that are brave enough to come in and be open to learning. Mm-hmm. But you know, as far as the tools go, I mean, a lot of it, the foundation is about awareness. So if you're aware of the fact that you're becoming angry, there's a lot of stuff you can do to stop that anger cycle. Mm-hmm. And so the awareness is all about training your mind, training your attention to spend more time in the present moment. Because we know from research that the mind wanders a lot. About 50% of the time, our mind is wandering to the past and to the future. And usually it's a negative past and a negative future. So negative past, which is, you know, things that I wish I hadn't done, bad things that happened to me, things that people shouldn't have done to me, which is all about sadness and depression. Or the negative future, which is, oh my God, I'm worrying about things that might happen tomorrow or might not happen. And that's all about dread, worry, stress, anxiety. So the more time we can spend in the present moment, the better off, well, the happier we are, but the more chance we have to be in touch with what's going on in our body so that we can go in the moment, okay, I'm starting to get a little bit annoyed here. Like, what's going on? And look around and then take some steps to interrupt it. The other part that we know is that attention is closely linked to emotion. So what we pay attention to greatly influences how we feel. And how we feel greatly influences what we pay attention to. Mm-hmm. So, for instance, you know, back when I was married, I would give this example of, you know, think of anger on a 1 through 10 scale, like intensity. So 1 is calm, 10 is enraged, Incredible Hulk. And you want to get on it before it gets to like a 5. Because once it goes over a 5, you kind of become anger at some point, and the anger takes over. Okay, so I'm coming home from work. Maybe I'm at a 1 because I'm just kind of stressed and tired. Pull up into the driveway. One of my kids has left their bike in the driveway. So I got to stop the car short, get out, move the bike, get back in the car, pull the car all the way in, go from a 1 to a 2. Going through the laundry room. There's dirty clothes all over the floor. So I'm kind of picking my way through the laundry room, go from a 2 to a 3. Come inside, there's some trash on the floor in the hallway, go from a 3 to a 4. Say hi to my teenage son, who's got his head buried in a video game. He doesn't say hi back. Go from a, where I am, 5 to a 6. Come in, and this didn't really happen, but just for the sake of example, let's say my 2-year-old was drawing on the wall, go from a 6 to a 7. So now I come in to see my wife at that moment in the kitchen, and I'm at a 7 on a 10-point scale, you can imagine that interaction's not going to go very well because I'm already angry, but I'm looking for things to keep me angry. So my attention has grabbed my eyeballs and it's scanning the environment to look for things that keep me angry. So when I get to this conversation with my wife, first time I've seen her in, 12 hours, that's probably not going to go very well. And here's the thing, none of that had anything to do with her. So that's all me displacing my anger onto her. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you want to be aware of the dynamic of anger and attention. And when you start to get angry, realize that your attention is going to be hijacked and that you begin to look around for things that keep you angry. Because when you can become aware of that dynamic, you can interrupt it.
Nice. Oh, wow. That like really brought everything together. That scenario, it's like, wow. Okay, so what your attention is linked to the emotions, mm-hmm. what you're paying attention to. And if you can stop yourself in that moment, like you would probably, like you're at a 1 in the car, right? You drive up, you see the car, the bike. What would a tool be that somebody could use? Like you could tell the bike's making a little bit more, get in the house. How do they interrupt it?
So the other way to do that is, let's say I pull up into the driveway, I'm going to a 2, maybe I get to a 3 in the laundry room. if I'm aware of my body, if I'm in the present moment, I can go, okay, wait, so my heart rate's going up, blood pressure's going up, got a little muscle tension here, my blood's rushing in my fists. Okay, let me just step outside for a few minutes, a few seconds, breathe deeply. I mean, I can look at the lawn or the trees and just realize, okay, wait, I'm switching hats near, now I'm going from work to home. Calm down. I mean, you can do a brief visualization of, you know, one of the ones I like is imagine breathing in white light. If you're religious or spiritual, you can imagine it coming from your higher power. Whatever you need in that moment is in that white light. So breathe in through your nose. Let's say I'm breathing in peacefulness, relaxation, calm. Breathe out. When you breathe out black smoke, which is whatever you don't need is in that black smoke. Mm-hmm. Anger, frustration, stress, fear. And so just doing something like that for a minute will calm you back down, bring your heart rate back down, relax your muscles slightly, and then you can go inside and you'll be okay.
Nice. Yeah. So doable.
It's doable, but it's got to be driven by the person that's dealing with the anger. That's the thing. So if I come in and my wife's like, oh, you seem tense, relax, you know, why don't you go up? I mean, like, it always amazes me because there's almost nothing she could say in that situation that would help me out.
Yeah.
I mean, depending on where you're at with the anger and how aware you are, it seems to fuel the anger often. Mm-hmm. But it's got to be driven internally. It's got to be driven by the individual themselves.
By the individual. And I imagine, like, the men you've worked with or the women you've worked with, when they've learned to control that anger, how much does it change their life?
It's pretty remarkable. I mean, because a lot of times people that are angry are not enjoying life that much. Mm-hmm. You know, I can't tell you how many families and executives that I've dealt with that, you know, their primary goal in life has been to create wealth. And they've done a fantastic job of that. They have more wealth than they can spend in a couple lifetimes. And they've got a wife or a husband and kids at home, and they have everything that they could want materially, and they're miserable. And, you know, to me, it's such a shame that with learning some of these tools, you can learn to be more relaxed, you can learn to enjoy life more, you can learn to be quicker and easier to laughter, you can learn to be more intimate and vulnerable in your relationship, thereby creating a better relationship. I mean, the upside is tremendous. For instance, can I read an email I got?
Yes, please. Yes.
This was from a guy, someone that took my anger management course. He's an MD. He has a huge private practice. And he said, each one of your methods works very well for me. However, I found one which has more magic to it than the others. It's the compassion offered to others. I found that when I am thinking, may you be healthy, may you be peaceful, may you live life with ease and well-being in the presence of an angry person, it has the power to reduce their anger and often causes them to behave calmly or lovingly towards me as I repeat these thoughts in my mind. You've made a much calmer life possible for me. Life is worth living like this. So what he's talking about there is this another tool called loving kindness meditation, or metta. And it's, you know, it's been around for 2,500 years. It's just been in the past 10 years, I would say, that they've done research on it, which proves that there's a variety of benefits to it. And, you know, it's basically you imagine someone that you love very much and you wish kind thoughts upon them. May you be happy, may you be healthy, may you live life with ease and well-being. Then you think of the two of you together, wish kind thoughts upon both of you. Then you think of yourself and wish kind thoughts upon just you. And from there, you can kind of expand family, company, school, state, country, world kind of a thing. Very powerful meditation. And the other possibility is that you can also include someone in there that you find very difficult or annoying. That's a little bit more advanced. Mm-hmm. But what he did is he took those thoughts and started applying them to difficult people in his life just throughout the day. And what happens is, as you think those thoughts, you begin to calm your own physiology. And as you calm your own physiology, the other person will pick up on it from emotional contagion, from the mirror neurons. And so they'll pick up on your increasing calm, and usually they'll calm down too. So it makes for much better interaction.
Yeah. It's something we talk about in upkeep three a lot, our thoughts, the power of our thoughts, right? And mm-hmm. the power of the negative narrative, the time, like you said, 50% of the time our brain is like not being controlled whatsoever, you know, and just letting all these things come in, and how we have to consciously choose to put those powerful thoughts in our mind.
Yeah, and to that point, I mean, I think, you know, I've done this, I don't know, 25 years now. And the more I've done this work, the more I've become convinced that the mind is just a random thought generating machine. Mm. Like, it just sits there and spits out thoughts. Mm-hmm. And I don't even consider myself my mind anymore. Mm-hmm. I consider myself kind of this entity looking down upon my mind and going, oh, there it is again. You know, I'm thinking that thought of I'm an idiot or I'm worthless or I need to lose weight, whatever it is, right? We've all had those negative thoughts.
Yeah.
You know, now I can go, oh, there's that thought of I'm an idiot. Well, I've heard that before. I know it's not true. I'm just going to let it go. Mm. And so, you know, and that kind of rolls into the next tool of what I would say cognitive reinterpretation, which is just a fancy phrase for how do you interpret what's going on around you? And the best example I can give you of this is road rage. So every angry person that comes in to see me has some degree of road rage. They get mad on the freeway, right? Which is not uncommon. But I mean, I remember when I was younger, you know, I'd be in the fast lane doing, I don't know, 80, and someone would come screaming up and tailgate me doing 100, and I would get upset. I'd get mad. And then, you know, it leads into all sorts of problems, right? You tap on the brakes a little bit. You're not going to get past me. Like, you get angry, and then you start doing really stupid stuff.
Yes.
And so now what I do is I just reinterpret their motive and their destination. So, you know, where I used to think, what an a-hole, he shouldn't be doing that. Mm-hmm. And now I think, well, maybe there's a pregnant woman in the back of the car that needs to give birth. Maybe there's a sick child in the back of the car. Obviously, they need to get to their destination more quickly than I do. I'm just going to get over a lane, let them go by, get back over. No anger, no problem.
Yeah.
That's a simple reinterpretation. And the funny thing is, I don't know if either of those interpretations are accurate. You know, I don't know if this guy's actually a jerk. And I don't know if they actually need to get to the ER, but why not pick the interpretation that serves me?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. I agree with that. I so full-heartedly agree with that.
And I think, you know, if you extend that into relationships, I know you're working with women. So, and I think that in relationships, a lot of times we get in these spaces where we accumulate these resentments and annoyances with our partner. And if you let that stuff accumulate over time, I think what happens to many of us is we get into these, we begin to interpret the motivation and intention of our partners negatively. Mm-hmm. I mean, to a broad extent, to a pretty big extent. Mm-hmm. And then it becomes just everything they do, whether it's neutral, even positive, we can interpret it through a negative lens. And so they can never win once we get to that point.
Yeah.
So I've found in many relationships, it makes a lot of sense to have a conversation with your partner and just say, look, you know, it seems like we've gotten in this negative space lately. How about if we agree to both really try to interpret each other's intentions and motivations with some grace and positivity and kindness? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And just kind of recalibrate that?
Yeah. So much more powerful. I mean, it takes away so many minutes,
yeah,
hours, days sometimes, you know, of being angry, upset, and won't talk to each other, and a lot of waste of time. And that's something I've learned in this life. Life's too precious, right? Yeah. We've got to savor every moment. That kind of made me think of a thought. Is there a tool that you ever use to teach the spouse who's having the anger portrayed on them how to combat that? You know, because if you have an angry spouse who's like beating you down, portraying on you all the time, projecting on you, it's so hard to not internalize it.
Yeah, right. And I think that, you know, part of it is understanding the dynamics of what's happening. Mm-hmm. So for instance, let's say you've got a spouse that has some narcissistic tendencies. Okay. And one of the dynamics of narcissism is that when you criticize them, or they perceive you're criticizing them, they will respond with rage or a high degree of anger. And so once you realize that's the dynamic, you can, and you know, often it's like, gee, honey, we need to talk about, you know, the financial budget. Let's talk about the budget. And they begin to get escalated, and pretty soon they're attacking you saying, well, you just need to earn more money. And so once you understand the dynamic of, okay, I'm going to get attacked verbally when I bring this criticism up or even this sensitive subject, you can begin to name it and work around it. So, okay, so he's starting to attack me. I knew this was coming. So, yeah, okay, let's talk about the issue of earning more money later. Right now I need to come back to the topic of the budget and our spending. That's another topic, another conversation that we can talk about later. Happy to have that conversation. Right now I need to talk about the budget and our spending. Mm-hmm. So we can kind of rein in spending. And you have to keep bringing it back over and over and over. And just know that's the topic, and know at the core of your being that it's not about you. Mm-hmm. That's not your anger, that's their anger. Mm-hmm. And you know, I think back when I was married, there was some of this dynamic going on, and I got really good at splitting my attention in those moments. So I would coach myself in my own head, and my ex-wife would be yelling at me, and I'm like, I'm not really sure why she's yelling at me. I haven't done anything wrong. Mm-hmm. Yelling at me. So I remember just thinking, okay, well, I'm going to work on being calm while she's yelling at me. And so I would, you know, say things like, okay, breathe. This has nothing to do with you. You're okay. And I remember I would repeat this line of a song. I think it's a Shin song. You can't wrestle a dove. And so I would just repeat this so I could split my attention and pay attention to her and respond appropriately. And then just repeating these things in my head to stay calm. And, you know, it's funny, in the book I wrote, that was actually one of the examples that was in my book. And I didn't even realize it until later after I was divorced. And I was like, wow, that's the one example, like that's the one part that she was in, was her yelling at me. Like, huh.
Yeah.
So I think you can do it. I think it takes practice. I think it takes some great clarity that it's not about you. But to do that, you also have to not be doing anything wrong either. I mean, I think that if you're, you know, doing things wrong on the side, doing things you shouldn't be doing, I think it can muddy the water.
Yeah, for sure.
So the other one is, you know, when I started this career, I studied at UC Berkeley, and they teach you very sternly that everything you say and think has to be based on research. And so that was my focus for many years. And then, you know, as I've gotten older, I've kind of branched out of that because I know that there are things that are true that can't necessarily be proven by science or by the scientific method. And one of those things, which there is some scientific backing for, but it's the idea of visualization, which I mentioned already with the breathe in white light, breathe out black smoke. But one thing you can do to protect yourself emotionally is this concept called shielding, where, you know, you just think to yourself, shield, and then you imagine or visualize when I do it, I imagine an egg-shaped shield surrounding my whole body. And for me, it's blue. It can be any color you want, but that shield keeps out negative energy, negative emotional energy, but it allows the positive in. Mm-hmm. And so for those people that are really empathic, it's a good tool to use going into a shopping mall, going into a concert, going into any large crowd. But you can also use it if you're going into a conversation with a spouse that you know is probably going to get ticked.
Yeah.
And, you know, the more you practice it, the better you get at it. When I first started it, you know, I don't think I was that good at it. Now I can just think shield, it's up, and it's no big deal.
Wow. Yeah, that's pretty empowering if you can get that concept down. I mean, when you explained that to me, I saw the vision of things just bouncing off. Penetrate. They just were bouncing off, you know?
It was funny. I had a client who was a great musician. He actually cut an album in Tennessee. But when he was starting out, he was playing in a lot of bars. And, you know, half the people there were interested in the music, half could care less. And so they'd be talking, and they were sending kind of negative stuff his way. Like sometimes they'd, you know, jaw at him or make fun of him or whatever it was. And he had a hard time staying in the zone to play at his level of ability. And so he said, you know, what can I do? And so I taught him this technique of shielding. So he would get up on stage and he said, it just looks like I'm fiddling with my amp. But what I'm doing is thinking about the shield, and I can see it come up from the floor. It's blue. I can see the specks of dust floating through it. It envelops me and my guitar, seals off at the head. And that, once I get there, I'm solid. And then I just shred.
Wow. That's empowering. That is empowering. I really like that.
And the other thing to consider for people that are getting the anger directed at them is to tune into your physiology. The biggest one for me is heart rate. So if I'm getting anger at me, the emotional contagion piece will automatically up your heart rate. It'll increase your muscle tension. You know, because your body's preparing you to attack in return. Mm-hmm. So you have to stay ahead of that and breathe deeply and focus on bringing your heart rate down slightly. Mm-hmm. And you can do that with practice.
Okay. And do you do that kind of through breath?
Yes.
Yeah.
Focus. I mean, I can, you know, kind of visualize my heart rate slowing, my heart actually beating more slowly.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I can see how that would totally like keep you a little more in a level place as this is coming at you. So then you can be thinking, oh yeah, shield. Oh yeah, I'm going to remove myself.
And I mean, the funny thing is you have to remind yourself to breathe, because any of the negative emotions will make you breathe shallow, mm-hmm. which means you're not getting enough oxygen in, and your brain runs on two things, glucose and oxygen. Mm-hmm. If you're not getting enough oxygen in, your brain's not working at peak performance. And you know, our brain's really sensitive to slight variations in oxygen level in our blood. So, you know, you literally, I remember thinking this, like, God, this is so dumb. Like, I'm telling myself to breathe my whole life. But I do. I have to remind myself to breathe throughout the day, and especially intense situations.
It's so true. When I have clients text me and they're having a moment, I can just see in their text this just like rolling of words, and yeah. I can just feel it. I mean, I'm reading it and I'm not breathing. So yeah. I'll text back often. I'll be like, breathe just for a minute. I want you to just sit there and breathe. And so often I'll get a text back from them like, I've totally forgot to breathe. Yeah. I haven't been breathing. And it's, yeah, our breath. I don't think we know how powerful that little thing we do daily to stay alive really is for our emotional health.
Yeah, I heard a saying a while back that I really liked. It was, the breath is the remote control for the brain.
Wow. Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, that makes sense.
It's so true. I love that. The breath is the remote control for the brain. I love that. Might have to name this this talk something with that. That's awesome. Okay, let's kind of wrap up here just a little bit on, why do you feel like anger's increasing?
That's a huge question. You know, I think that there are social fears out there. I think that there's a lot of economic fear. I think that anxiety is increasing. So as anxiety is increasing, anger can be a secondary emotion for the anxiety. Especially for men, we know depression is increasing, and depression will often show up as irritability in men. It doesn't show up as sadness particularly. And I remember there's a great book called Angry White Men by Michael Kimmel. He's a sociologist. And he did a lot of work in this and found that there's a lot of middle class to lower middle class white men that are furious because they feel that they were promised something by America, the American dream. And the promise was broken. And the promise went something like this: if I work hard, if I do the right things, then I will earn enough to support my family, and I will earn enough to be able to buy a house. And they found that that wasn't the case. And then they found, by their, you know, belief system, it feels to them as if there are all these protected groups coming in front of them for government handouts. And they feel like they've been cut in line, like these other groups have cut in line in front of them. Then they're in a situation where their wife is supposed to work because they can't make enough money. And then the wife is upset because that broke their promise that they would be able to stay at home with the kids. So now they're out in the workforce, they're being forced to work, they don't want to work. Often they're earning more than the man, the husband, which is emasculating for the man. And it's kind of this snowball effect. And so I think that's part of it as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. Our dynamics in society has changed so much, you know?
And I think there's a lot of fear under it. I mean, I think there's fear of, you know, for Caucasians, I think there's fears of being the minority in America. I think there's fears of being displaced in their jobs. I think there's fear of being placed by automation, robots, technology. And so it becomes a pretty complex problem.
Yeah. Yeah, it sounds like it. Yeah, I think you were right. Like, this is a long answer. Like, to try and fully understand that. Yeah, yeah. But I agree. The fears and the anxiety and the American dream that we thought was there. I mean, it's so different now. It really is so different now. So those are some really good points. Well, I want you to share your information on how, like, if people want to get a hold of you, tell us about your book, your programs. How can they find you?
All right. So I've got a couple websites. So you can find me at guidetoself.com. So that's GUIDETOSELF.com. And that's more executive coaching and local, where I see local clients. Okay. Then I've got another site that's webangermanagement.com. And there I offer online video courses, and the courses are on anger management, anxiety management, and positive psychology or happiness. The book is available there, which is entitled How Can I Be Happy? And you can also join my Facebook page at facebook.com/guidetoselfcoaching. I'm on Twitter at John Shin, JohnSchin. And Instagram at j.shinnerer, and that's SCHINNERER. Awesome. Probably should have picked an easier handle on that one.
Well, and I will make sure I have all of these correct, that when I upload this video, I will put all of those in under it so they can have easy access to reaching you. You are needed, and I'm really excited that, because you're in San Francisco, I have clients all over the United States and some in Canada, that you have your online courses that can be accessed anywhere.
Yeah, and thank you. And I started those out about 10 years ago with the idea that my idea was there's millions of men that need these tools that maybe don't have the financial resources to come in and see me, aren't nearby, or don't have the courage to come in and see someone individually, which I get. So I thought, let me put something together that these guys can tap into anonymously, so to speak, in the comfort of their own home, in the privacy of their home. The funny thing was, I went live with it and immediately started getting hundreds of emails from angry women all over the world. And I was like, I didn't know. Like, they told me to find a niche. I was looking for a niche. I had to change it, so it was gender neutral.
Gender neutral. A lot of angry women out there, apparently.
I'm always surprised.
Yeah, I'm actually surprised by that statistic as well. What a blessing it is to have this option for women, you know, to help women that may have these same fears and anxiety, and I'm not getting what I was promised throughout my life that I would have by finding an amazing husband and living the white picket fence, you know. Mm-hmm. The dream, right? So yeah, I am really thrilled to be able to share this with others, and I completely support what you are doing, and I love your demeanor. You're so calm.
Thanks.
It's like you bring this calmness, and when I met you in San Francisco, I felt the same way. So you're a blessing to everyone around you. So I want to thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it.
You are very welcome. And I will look forward to having more conversations with you in the future.
Sounds great. I look forward to it.
Okay. Thank you so much, John.
Thank you for listening today. I hope you have enjoyed this podcast. If you have found that this information has been helpful in your life, please hit the subscribe button. And I would love if you would leave me a review. And don't forget, you are always welcome to share this podcast with your friends and family. That way, you will be helping them to elevate their marriage and life as well.